Welcome to this week's episode of Comes Naturally. We are
Joe.
And I am Cody. That empty space, of course. Mike, or not Mike, however you want to look at it. He is not here today.
Well, I can't see it, so I'm not going to look at it.
Fair enough. I'm not going to look at the empty space that you mentioned.
No, it just reminds me of Mike.
Big empty space. Speaking of big empty spaces.
Yes.
So, 37 years have passed since 1982.
Oh, God, I thought you were going to say my birth.
I mean, in a way, yes.
Almost, yes.
I mean, technically not, because you're 36, but... But what happened in 1982, Joe?
A little movie came out called The Dark Crystal.
Oh, yeah. So what happened 37 years later?
A little show came out called The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance.
Oh, if you guys can't figure it out today, we're talking about The Dark Crystal. So this is a good topic for Joe and I to talk about because Mike, of course, has not watched it. And he's not here, so it kind of like...
adds to it.
Adds to the whole thing of him going, oh, okay.
And this is being on Twitter. We would have asked Mike about how he enjoyed Aladdin, the new one, but of course he's not here.
Exactly, so we can't ask him.
Yeah.
So instead, we are going to be talking about Dark Crystal. So Joe... and I both watched the new series, The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance. Then Joe recently rewatched, or maybe for the first time, watched Dark Crystal, the movie from 1982. We say maybe because he doesn't remember it, but nope. He kind of remembers it, but he doesn't remember it, so yep. We're not too sure. It's
there-ish.
So I would like to think it's his first experience with it in general, other than the being in zeitgeist for the last 37 years. Because, you know, Dark Crystal's popped its puppeted head around in different places throughout the years. Not so much as it has now because of the new series, but in the last 37 years, it's been brought up. And he's seen Labyrinth, so he's seen, you know, stuff in that type of thing. You've seen Labyrinth, right?
Again, it's one of those things I think I've seen.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
It has David Bowie in it.
It has David Bowie,
and it has humans in it.
Yeah, and it has humans
okay,
in it,
okay, making sure.
He plays the Goblin King.
Yep, there you go. So anyways, we'll just go over what we normally do with it, for the series. We'll talk about the movie too, but what are the three things you really liked about it? And what was one thing you were surprised about?
So the three things that I really liked about it, the first being that how much of it was actually practical effects.
Yes.
Again, going into it, I know of what it is. But I again don't think I'd really ever watched the original series. So I didn't know how much, and knowing that obviously in the original movie, you are limited very much in what you can do. You have the whole Star Wars thing that you can look at it as, you know, there's stuff that they could do at that time, but maybe the way they envisioned it, you know, they wanted to do something different. So this is a perfect opportunity for them to go back and make it all CG and all these different characters and whatnot, but they didn't.
Yep.
They have all practical effects, all puppetry. There's a little bit of CGI here and there. It's definitely seen in the background shots, the stuff where you're seeing like the world off in the distance, type of stuff. But pretty much anything like down to the carriage that they had, the little rolly bugs that they used for the wheels of the carriage, all of the creatures, all of the trees, the actual sets, everything was practical. And that was absolutely fantastic. The second thing that I really enjoyed about it, the characters... For me, a couple of them took a little bit to get really into, especially the main guy character, Rianne.
Yep.
I understand his character arc. It's just that type of character where he's running away from everything's kind of a joke to him at the beginning.
Yeah.
He runs away from his troubles. Is a little bit just kind of annoying. But I understand that character arc. He has to go through that in order to get to where he is at the end, essentially kind of the main warrior of the Gelflings to push back the Skeksis. I really enjoyed the story, knowing nothing about the original show, and going into it to find out that it is just this world that exists out on its own. It has no ties to Earth whatsoever. This is the planet Thra. The crystal basically comes into existence, which drives all the life on Thra. You have Mother Agra, who comes up as one of the first real sentient creatures, and she's basically the protector of the crystal, essentially. It's not until the Ursex,
yeah,
come down some millennia afterwards that that they offer to protect the crystal as well and to help study it or whatnot. They end up fracturing the crystal, which divides them into two between the Ursess and the Skeksis. And from there, the Skeksis take over as the protector of the crystal. They basically trick Mother Agra into by building her a machine that allows her to see all of the rest of the universe and experience all that stuff so that she can go learn this stuff and bring it back. And in that amount of time that they are just draining the crystal of its power,
so and corrupting it.
And corrupting it at the same time, in order for them to be immortal. And at a certain point in time, that's when they start. This takes place during the actual show. They find out that they can actually hook up the Gelflings to the crystal in such a way that they're able to drain the life essence out of the Gelflings and have a actual drink potion that they can have to make themselves young. So the story there, and just this fleshed out world and the history that's not even everything that they go over in the show, let alone the movie later on, is just absolutely fun and amazing to go back. It made me go back after watching the show, after watching the movie, and try and learn more about the timeline of the of everything, and to find out that I know that they made a book, like a giant coffee table style book about it, explaining not only just the artwork and whatnot behind it, but the history of the world of Thra. There's so much there, and it is so so well done, the storytelling in this series. The thing that I was surprised about is how much I could get over the puppetry. At first, it's a little bit weird.
Yes.
The Gelflings, especially, because they kind of are human-ish. Like, they're not human at all. But they have a very more... Out of all the creatures of Thra...
They're the most humanoid.
They're the most humanoid.
Yeah.
Exactly. So at first, it's a little bit weird. They definitely move like puppets. They definitely... run, or they have a canter like a puppet. But as you get further into the series, as you become more emotionally attached to the characters, that seems to really go away.
Fades very quickly.
Really up until they start fighting each other. Then you're like, okay, this literally looks like puppets fighting.
Yeah.
Where it's just like this really rigid, like, type of just really rigid hand movement and swords, not like so much of a full swing, just kind of like a push out type thing. But yeah, that's pretty much my three things that I really enjoyed about it and the thing I surprised. Cody?
So I will agree with almost everything you said, really. The puppetry was fantastic, and the fact that it's, and this goes to my surprise, is how much it felt like the original movie.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you're coming from the Jim Henson Company, who has been doing nothing but puppetry since, you know, the dawn of their existence.
Right.
But to your point earlier about the CG thing, it would have been easier and probably quicker to CG way more than they did, because they have full sets that, at certain points, I'm pretty sure didn't even have CG'd backgrounds. They were just the rest of the set. Like, it was just probably a painted wall of some sort.
Right.
But, like, you have all the different environments you get to go to. obviously inside the Crystal Castle, that's one thing. Because it looks, to me, it reminded me a lot of the movie Cull.
Yeah.
Because of the way the castle looked. It looked organic in a way. Like, yes, it grew. Like it was something. Like it's the husk of a creature that once existed. Uh-huh. But it's been like barbarically taken over and like modified to be living in. Especially with the whole crystal, like, I don't want to say conveyor belt, but like the little mechanism that it's raised and lowered on.
Mm-hmm.
Like that whole thing, it's just amazing how much they made it all really there. You know, like the, for example, like that, when it comes up and it grabs it, you can see it's CG. It's not real,
yeah,
until it grabs the crystal. And then there's parts of that's real. The crystal itself, I believe, was,
I'm pretty sure it was
a
real
object. It, yeah, was there. And like I said, it's the puppetry and the way, like, because for you not have seen the original movie and this being your first exposure to it, for the most part, like full on exposure to it, you see, you're like, oh, this feels like if they made this movie, like this, the show feels like they made it the same time they made the movie.
Yeah.
And you almost can't tell the difference other than like the, obviously the quality of the video.
Right.
But you're like, oh, this is the people who made the masters who made this movie have made this show.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, this is exactly what I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you got.
It doesn't have the feel of somebody going back to it and being like, well, we have this original show. We have all of this other material that we could use, but we could also change it. And it doesn't really mesh very well with the original movie, but no, it really does.
Yeah. I mean, it's tremendously well done.
And it, like you said, it just feels like a continuation of the actual movie.
Yeah.
It's not somebody else's interpretation,
yeah,
of the movie.
And that brings me to my second point of what I liked about it was the fact that it not only felt like visually, but like story-wise, you felt like you're just learning more about the world of Dark Crystal,
mm-hmm,
and the world of Thrall and all the fun stuff. So you get to see more of it. You obviously, in this one, there's way more Gelflings than there are in the movie, as, yeah, you now know.
Surprising.
And more so that we don't even see, but you get to learn more about, because it's a prequel, what was happening to it. And it's even more, I mean, I don't think they'd ever go back and do a prequel to the prequel, but...
The pre-sequel?
Yeah, the pre-sequel. Oh, that would be in between the two. It's, yeah, a sequel, but a prequel still. The next season would be a pre-sequel. But like a pre-prequel, like a prequel to the prequel to the movie itself. And the reason why is like, I kind of wish I knew more about, and you get it a little bit in the end of the show, and you get some of it in the movie where you see the Ursix as Ursix, and then when they're separated.
Yeah.
But it's through visions, and it's, yeah, through, I would like to see the world before that, but you got to realize if you have the world before that, you don't have the Gelflings. Because they were all spawned in that time frame of the separation of the Ursix. Mm-hmm. Or, well, before the Ursix were there, then the separation happened. Life became anew. The Dark Crystal, well, the crystal itself, not the Dark Crystal, it's the bad one. The crystal imbued life onto Thra, letting things like all the different creatures, the Gelflings, exist. That's why there's only one Agra, because, yeah, she was there before life really became... we never know. We don't even know how old she is. But she's there. You have the emergence of the Ursix that would be interesting to see. And I don't even know if that's ever a thing they could explore, but they,
right,
could.
Right, because that's one thing that even in the show or the movie, they just kind of vaguely glaze upon that they just came down.
Yeah.
You know, so they're obviously alien to Thra. They're, yeah, not from Thra. They came to Thra because of the crystal. I know some stuff that I read afterwards had spoke about how there was like a crystal like that on their planet, and I can't remember what happened to it, but then that's what drew them to Thra.
Yeah, and the castle essentially is their ship, right?
I don't remember if the castle is the ship, no.
I can't remember if they said something
but,
like that.
But that was a cool thing to see and to experience, for the first time as well, going through the show, that's that visual of the castle, like you said, being very organic and very stone or whatever it was. And then at the end of the movie, they reunite the crystal and all that breaks away and you realize, oh no, it's actually a crystal castle. Yep. It's made of crystal. Just all of this, whatever it was,
yep,
had literally taken over the castle and yep, corrupted it essentially.
Yeah, the darkness essentially. Yeah. So I mean, it's like, I would like to see how that all came about, like how they decided to fracture the crystal, which then caused the separation of the Ursix, to then separate from the Ur and the Skeksis. And like kind of like that before, and then like see the emergence of the Gelflings, I guess. I don't know. It'd be really interesting to see, because there's a lot more you don't get to see with the show than what I would have thought of. Like before when I heard about it, I thought it was like a sequel to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, oh, this is the Dark Crystal is healthy again. It's back to being a crystal, and then it gets corrupted because the Skeksis return or some nonsense. I don't know.
There's another threat that comes
along. Yeah, exactly.
To take upon this power that, yep, yeah.
So, but I was happy with what they did. It was the prequel, because you could kind of see what led to it, and they did a very good job of paying not just homage but leading into the story that is the Dark Crystal movie from 1982. You get to see the characters. Hup, for example, one of the podlings who wants to be a Padawan, and he has his spoon. And you realize, if you've seen the movie before, Joe, now knowing that he has a lineage that reaches all the way back into the movie itself.
Yeah.
Because one of the reasons why is because there are no Gelflings, or they're not supposed to be any Gelflings. So the podlings are all there kind of is for sentient life left on Thra. Agra has become a hermit.
Extreme hermit.
She is, her machine has fallen into disarray. She hasn't talked to anybody in like a couple hundred years, I remember, if I remember right from the movie.
Yeah.
Even
there seems to be, and something that I looked up afterwards to get the timeline of the whole entire thing, no one really could agree on that there was a timeline or when the show takes place versus the movie. But I, if I recall right, in the movie, they mentioned that the Skeksis have been protectors of the crystal for about 1,000 cycles or whatever they used for their time of measurement.
Yep.
And in the show, Agra comes out of her astral projection or whatever you want to call it, and says something along the lines of 300 cycles or years or whatever have passed, yeah, since she's left. So it seems like the time in between the show and the movie is somewhere right around 700 years.
Yeah, which in a way makes sense, because, spoiler alert for the show, and we're going to spoil some stuff in the movie too, which we already have in a way. The show ends with the Gelflings, with the help of the power of the crystal, pushing the Skeksis away. So the Skeksis are nowhere around. They're pushed away from the castle itself. And they win this war, as whatever you want to call it. I don't know if you really call it a war, whatever it is.
More of a battle.
Yeah, battle. So there's this obviously 700 years between essentially now in the timeline of the show to the events of the movie. There's a whole lot of Gelflings still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting to think what happened to all of them, because we kind of know from the movie a lot of them were drained of the life essences, a lot of them were killed, trying to escape from being captured, B, just because there's terrible monsters everywhere now because the crystal's been corrupted and the darkness has spread, which is the same reason the castle looks the way it does, because whatever that is has corrupted the castle itself, which is the core of the life essence of Thra itself. And so it's interesting to look at the world they've built on top of from the movie with the new prequel show, kind of going forward to maybe a second season. Hopefully not like trying to stretch it out even more. But it'd be interesting to see where they take it if they were to do more, because of how dark it's going to have to get to be to the that 700 years of time between, or 700 cycles between, because cycles could be 4 days, who knows?
Right.
But there's a whole lot of terrible shit that has to happen.
Yeah.
To the Gelflings and to Thrall itself.
In order to get to where you were at in the movie.
Exactly. Yeah. So. Yeah.
And they hint at a lot that there are a lot of different clans of Gelflings. I think they, I want to say there was seven.
There's six total.
Seven or so.
Well, because that one room she goes into that she's trying to solve the puzzle, there's six different rooms.
Yeah, okay.
So there's six different ones.
But you don't even see all those in the show.
So yeah, you see three.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right? Or four. No, you see four.
Four. Yeah, four.
Yeah.
Underground, desert.
No, that's five. Sorry, because I didn't count the desert first time because I just... yeah, because you have the
ones Rianne's
that
group
that protect the crystal, the underground ones.
Well, they're because they're not a separate faction. They're from different Gelflings from different tribes. Because remember, Rianne's best friend, his twin sister, comes after him, and they're from a different group.
You're right. I did forget about that.
Because I believe they specify that there's six different groups.
Okay, so then you have the Almadra ones. You have the iron wood something stone.
Yeah, stone something or other. Stone the one Rianne belongs to.
The one from underground, the one that Deep belongs to. And then you have the sand ones, the desert people that's supposed to worship death, as they said in the movie or the show.
Yeah. So I know those four we see. And one of those factions, Deet's group, the underground people, most of the main group in this one, which is the Almadra's group, I can't remember the name of them, they believe they're just lore.
Yeah.
Like they're a long forgotten race that some people don't even believe exists, and if they do, exactly. They're trash people.
Yeah.
Like they're not real Gelflings. So there's that. So it's interesting to see, like, obviously in that 700 cycles difference between the end of the show and the beginning of the movie, a lot of bad things happen. The darkness clearly does not happen, but what I mean is, I think it'd be cool for the next season to see the flourishing of the Gelflings in the absence of the Skeksis, to the Skeksis coming back into power, taking the crystal back, and devastating the landscape and the Gelflings leading up to the movie. See how that happens. That'd be kind of how I would see, or what I'd want to see happen in the next season. Only next season. I don't want them to like drag it out to be a bunch of bullshit.
Right.
Make very concise storytelling. If you can break it into two more seasons, fine, whatever. But just make it so the story is as good as it was. You don't
want to sit there and do what Supernatural did, which was like 20,000 years of fucking bullshit show. You know, when their first couple of seasons were very tight and very made sense, and they ended, and then you made more stuff because it's just so popular. Yeah,
exactly.
That's what I always hate about these shows, and that's what I kind of like where these newer shows are going, where it just seems like Stranger Things. Like, they have an idea of where they want to end.
Yep.
They're going to end there.
Yeah, they plan out, enough story to dictate how many seasons they're going to have.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not trying to scrounge for filler like you would with
a Monster of the Week type.
Yeah. Show. Like for Supernatural, Monster of the Week, or every week it's something different.
NCIS, something like very serialized.
Like a procedural show.
Yeah.
Cause like with like a Law and Order or any of those, That's the premise of the show itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason it works so well, and the reason it can continue on for 47 years in 95 different shows, because you're not telling a story.
Mm-hmm.
You're just telling different stories.
Yeah.
And you just have a core, like being a procedural, like Cops or like JAG or CSI and things like that. You just have a group of people, and it's their daily lives. And if you really believed that was the real world, some terrible shit is happening, because horrible shit happens
always
every day
to this
person. To these people. So it's like, that'd be terrible.
Yeah.
Supernatural, they went away from the bigger storytelling and had these little nuggets of story.
Yeah.
That didn't for several seasons only took place at the beginning of the show or beginning of the season and the end of the season. And the rest of it in the between was just Monster of the Week with them going towards the destination they're going to. You know, they're drifting through to this next city, because that's where that's in between their main goal of saving Dean's soul or whatever nonsense it was.
I was trying to find their father in the first season or two.
Yeah, because he disappeared.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that was a concise story, at least for something that you'd put on TV.
And then Monsters of the Week played into the plot.
But then you're now 20 years later, I don't exactly know, and you've jumped like 15 sharks within that amount of time. You know? Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, that, I don't want that to happen to anything like this show or any real other shows that I've been watching lately. I want them to have a nice, concise ending to them. So even if it just ends right here, I'm perfectly happy with it.
Yeah.
Because you have exactly what happens. You have a good ending, and then you find out that it was really fucked up in the end.
Yep.
In the actual movie. But even in that, you still have the movie ends and you have somewhat closure of what happened.
Yeah. So, I mean, even if you did like another prequel season between this one, Age of Resistance, and the movie, and then did another even movie after the original movie to tell like kind of what happened with the Ursics after that and things like that, would be even fun too. Or even a series to kind of end cap it with that. So two seasons, a movie, then another season to kind of give you that, I don't want to say closure, but like kind of like a wrapping up of like what happened to the world. But you know, whatever. Yeah, I digress. Whatever. So basically those are my three things. And I already mentioned the surprise one at the beginning is I can't believe they made it look and feel just like the original movie.
Very much so. The cast in the show was absolutely fantastic. God,
stunning.
I didn't realize, looking at the list here, like, I didn't realize how many fucking people were actually in this movie. I know watching it, like halfway through episode two or three, I just sat there and I'm like, why does the scientist sound kind of like the Joker? Is that fucking Mark Hamill? Is that Marky Hamill?
It was Mark Hamill.
I look it up and I'm like, sure enough, that's fucking Mark Hamill.
Mm-hmm.
And then looking through the rest of this list here, you have Mark Hamill, Nathalia Emmanuel, who does Deet, who I wanted to bring her up because in the show, the way her arc ends in the show is so fucking depressing.
Yes. Oh yeah. She does not have
a great ending for it. I expected to see her in the movie. And you don't see her.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I had seen the movie, and I know the movie very well. So I knew she didn't exist in the movie. Even her people don't exist in the movie. Because there's only two lines of Gelflings that exist in the movie, and that's Rianne's line and Brea's line.
Yeah.
So, and even in the movie, again, that's the reason I want the second season to explore that. You don't even know... You don't really understand how these two Gelflings exist in this devastated world, like where they come from in a way, you know, like all of a sudden there's these two Gelflings.
Yeah. The one female Gelfling, there was a short explanation of she was, her village was raided by the Skeksis and she was hidden away.
Yeah. That's what it means. Like you just kind of like you get to, there's these, all of a sudden there's these two Gelflings.
Yeah.
You have Kira, who's the female, and Jen, who's the male.
Yeah.
You have Agra, and you have Fizzgig, who's the pet.
Adorable, by the way.
What?
Adorable.
Yeah, I have like a stuffed animal of those.
Those
of that.
Little, they look like Trebles, but they actually have a face on them.
Yeah. They're not just balls of hair, but they're balls of hair with terrible teeth. They remind me of if, like, critters grew fur.
Yes.
But weren't terrifying.
Exactly.
But adorable terrifying, not like terrifying. So you have those two, and like the Jen, who again is the male Gelfling from the movie, he is entrusted to restore the Dark Crystals. He's giving the shard that original shard. Whenever I say the word shard, it just makes me think shart.
It's very close.
It's like very
a letter off.
Shard. He's entrusted with that. To reunite the crystal, and if he does this, then the Urs and the Skeksis will then merge back together, or as they allude in the movie, may just be killed.
Right.
They don't really know. They're like, we don't know what's going to happen, but we do know we're willing to sacrifice ourselves to save Thra, because Thra is being killed by the corruption, the darkness coming from the crystal. now known as the Dark Crystal. So they entrust him. He's a very reluctant hero because he's like, why am I special? We figure out why, because he's the descendant of.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have Kira, who is raised by the Podlings after her village is decimated by the Ursix. And then she is, well, they stumble onto each other because he's traveling past the Podlings village when he meets her. And of course, she has wings, so you know she's a female, because mm-hmm. that's how it works. Just like many bugs in the world, which is a weird thing they used.
Right.
So then that's kind of how you go about that. And that's kind of like the premise. You don't really know really where Jen came from. You just know that he's essentially being raised by the Ur in a sort of way. Like he lives in his own, on his own little patch of land, somehow not being affected by or being seen and found by the Skeksis, but is sort of under protection of the Ur in a way. Yeah. But like, not like, oh, we're with you all the time. He's like, oh my God, you're real. I don't know what's going on. You know, like, who are you? I don't know what's going on. What do you mean this crystal is going to do what? So then you jump to the show and you have a plethora of Gelfling.
Oh, yeah.
And like, more than you ever, like, I ever thought there would be. Like, the underground ones, the desert ones, the ones that live in the forest, the ones that live in the, I guess you could call it city. They, I think they mentioned one as, that's one of the ones we didn't see as water, near or around water. You do see them because there's the boats when Brea goes and brings the brightest gem.
Yeah.
To what's her face.
The weird mystic.
Yeah. So you know that's a group. They're based in water. They travel on water. They're mystics, whatever it happens to be. So you know they exist. You just never see them at all. But then you know that there's six because of the little room she's in when she does the whole drum and bass thing, which is really cool to watch. And then, of course, the rock monster comes out of it, which is really dope.
Yeah, the way he speaks, he has like the recorder type thing. He puts it against his arm and is able to talk.
Yeah, through the voice of the guy who created him.
Yeah.
Who you get... You know, is a Gelfling, but you don't know, again, don't know who he is. You never even find out who he is, other than the fact that he's somehow knows the whole history of the Gelflings.
And the history of the Skeksis and the Urs. God damn it, I can't remember the name. Ursers? Urs?
I don't want to say this is Urs.
Urs?
I want to say.
Because it's like a combination of the Ur-Skex name. So it's like the Ursk and the Skeksis. God damn it. I'm not going to get that right all night.
The Ur-ra.
Ur-ra.
Whatever. I don't fucking know. Bunch of weird ass names.
I swear they call them wizards in the show too.
They do. Yeah. Cause they're like, they're essentially in a way mystics.
Mystics. Yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't matter. But yeah, it's interesting because you have so, in the show, you only meet two of the Urs, but in the movie, there's a total. I think there's six of them. You see, right? Five or six of them.
There's like five or six of them
at the end when they reunite the crystal.
Yeah.
But like the one of them dies
in the movie or the show?
In the movie,
yes. So there's a scene where, two of them die technically. So you have the scene where towards the beginning where the Emperor dies and then his Ursus
counterpart,
which is the one that has been teaching Jin, dies.
Yes.
Then later on, when the scientist gets pushed into the pit that the crystal is held into,
which it goes to the core of the planet or whatever,
they then cut to the Ursa version of him and he just disappears.
Yeah, because he's back in the village.
No, they're on their way.
They're on the way there. Yeah, they're on the way. That's right. They're already on their way there. Because the Chamberlain tosses the scientist in.
Or, no, it wasn't the Chamberlain. No. He was attacked by... let me think about that one. That one was...
I'm thinking of the show now.
That one was the girl is able to commune with the creatures,
Oh, that's right.
So
yeah.
She sings.
Kira,
And talks to him and convinces the creatures to attack the scientist.
That's right. Yeah.
He begins attacking. He's trying to throw him off. Like,
yeah. Because remember thinking that was going to happen in the show because of the darkness taking over them and they get all agitated.
Yeah.
But it never actually, nothing ever happens with them. But it kind of plays towards the movie itself. But yeah, so like you have that, like they die. So like only like five of them are left over. Like, cause there's like, 10
there's one for every Skeksis that you see.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. It's 11. And not all of them are bad. Only like six or seven are bad ones. But they're terrible.
They're varying levels of bad, especially in the group that you have. The only real one that you kind of, that isn't really bad, although isn't bad now, I should really say, is the heretic, or the one that they used to call the conqueror.
Yep.
That dynamic right there was absolutely fun and hilarious to see, because he lived with his actual version, his actual wizard version, Urser version of himself.
Ergo.
And or they Ergon, knew, sure. Obviously the Skeksis and the Ursa know that they were actually one being at one point. They're the only ones that want to be one being again.
Yeah, the Skeksis do not.
Because they just want to be immortal. They just want to rule power. They're essentially the very bad version of the creature itself, the
Ursex, yeah.
Is a mainly benevolent being, but when you split them in two, you have the malevolent, the absolute malevolent version of the, via the Skeksis, the ones that wanted to use the crystal for their own power, which they end up doing in that form. And then you have the Ursas, the version of them that was more benevolent and wanted to help things out and culture life and whatnot. But the dynamic between the two, because that's really the only time that you get to see them both together, where the Ursa version of the heretic is very slow, very methodical in his talking and the storytelling. And then the heretic himself is very fast paced and he talks very concisely, and he just wants things done now. And it is absolutely hilarious to listen to the Ursa talk, and then the heretic is just sitting there going, come on, you can say it, you can say it, let's do it, you can say it, you can get to it, come on, you can do it. And then he finally gets to it and he's like, ah, he said it. Absolutely funny to watch. Well done acting on that was Andy Sandberg's part.
Yeah, Bill Hader was the other half.
Bill Hader was the other half. Sandberg played the heretic. Bill Hader played, and I keep forgetting his name, the Wanderer.
The names are hilarious, by the way, if you haven't looked them up.
I'm staring at some of them now.
Well, the Wanderer is Ergo.
Ergo.
Which is...
Wandering, yeah. Yep.
You have Urva, the Archer. But then you go to the Skeksis, you have Skekso, the Emperor, Skeksil, the Chamberlain, Skekvar, the General, Skektek, which is the Scientist, there's Maul, there's Gra, and if I'm not mistaken, when they're back together, they have that makes their full name.
Yeah, much like the Skeksis and Ursa, the name combined is the Ur-Skeks.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it does play to that. But going back to the number of actors in this fucking movie, you
so
have
many.
Anya Taylor, who plays Brea. You have Helena Bonham Carter, that plays the Almadra. Simon Pegg, which I didn't even realize was in it. He does such a good job.
Ridiculous.
Skeksil, he's the Chamberlain.
Yep.
He's the Chamberlain.
That fucking laugh,
right? Andy Sandberg, the heretic, Natalie Dormer played Annika, Keegan-Michael Key did Skek-Zok, Eddie Izzard was Cadia, although I don't remember what character that is.
He's the soothsayer guy, the one she wipes the mind of.
Oh, that was a hilarious scene as well, where she gets the idea that the dude's gonna fuck her over somehow, so she switches the T's, and then he just... fucking forgets everything, like literally everything.
Like, not just like, oh, I'm gonna erase like, your like, memory for like
thought,
a week.
Like, yeah, I thought like the whole thing was just to forget about this conversation it ever happened.
Or in the symbol, like this, go back to forget symbol, the symbol, blah, blah, yeah, blah, right?
No, it was it literally would have just wiped her whole entire memory of who she was out, yeah. But she got it. She flipped it over on him, and he just could not remember who he was. And then he kept forgetting. Like, he would kind of learn things and then forget.
Yeah, he'd be like, wait.
What?
And then like, there's that one scene, I think it's the second time, he introduces himself to the people, like, yes. Twice.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I'm so-and-so. I'm like, you're so good. That's so funny.
Right.
Yeah, so anyways, go ahead.
Jason Isaacs played Skek So. Alicia Vikander played Mira. Who's next that I really know on this list? Toby Jones, the librarian. Harvey Feinstein as Skek Ayuk.
Yep.
Whatever, however you pronounce that.
I think it's how you spell it.
Lena Headley as Madra Farah. She was the one that takes over the crown. The one from Stonewall, Stonehill,
Stone yeah. Iron. Yeah, she's the one something. That leads Rhiann's group.
Yeah.
Stonewood clan.
Stonewood. Yeah, there we go.
I was like, I know it's on here somewhere.
Awkwafina plays Skek Latch. And Sigourney Weaver, I didn't even realize was her. I don't know what she plays because you fucking.
She's the narrator.
She's the narrator. It says the myths, and that's all.
Oh, yeah. Myth speaker is what she's referred to. Okay. Yeah.
You click on it, and of course it just.
So in the movie, when the book opens, you know, the book.
That's her.
That's her.
Okay.
That essentially. Or yeah. Show. Sorry. In the show, when the book opens, that's her.
Yeah.
Telling the story of Thra.
Donna Kimball plays Agra fantastically.
So amazing, by the way.
Yeah. Benedict Wong is in it.
He plays I did not realize Skek until I looked at that.
Exactly, right?
No idea.
Like I said earlier, the only character that I had an idea the voice acting for, and it's probably because he does a lot of voice acting more recently, is Mark Hamill. And that's just because it kind of sounded like the Joker.
Yeah. Has that same high pitchedness and the tone to it?
Yeah. Those are the main ones that I know. Cody probably knows, has known a lot of these other guys.
Well, you have Mark Strong, who we all know I love, and he's the captain of the Crystal Castle Guard and Rhiann's father.
Uh huh.
Theo James, who plays Rekier. I can't remember. It's one of the members of the Dosin clan. Let's see. There's so many people in this. You mentioned majority of the bigger names.
Yeah, the ones that I would know.
Yeah, it's pretty much all the bigger ones. But I mean, there's like Joe said, like you're listening to it, and like other than Taron Egerton. Mark Hamill and what was the other one I nailed right away? I think it was Lena Headley. Those three, I was like, oh, I know exactly who they are. Because I knew a lot of the people were in it because I kept up on the news and I was like, okay, I know Simon Pegg's in it, and I know Mark Strong's in it, and I know all these people are in it, but I couldn't pinpoint who they were.
Yeah, because their voice acting was so well done.
Yeah,
the voices
like,
that they chose for these characters were so well done.
Yeah, it's like Anya Taylor Joy, who plays Brea, is, well, I mean, she's pretty famous in general, but like Natalie Emmanuel, or Nathalia? Nathalia Emmanuel? She's famous because of Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh shit, that's. That's why she sounds familiar. I couldn't pinpoint who it was. A, she doesn't talk with an accent in this.
True.
But she does have an accent in Game of Thrones. So I was like, oh, that didn't even sound like anything like her. I was like, that's tremendous, like, way to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, I was like I said, those three are the ones I really knew. And then I looked it up to see who's who, like, halfway through. Because, like, it was bothering me. Not bothering me. It was driving me insane because the person doing the Chamberlain was so well done. I literally thought it was the original guy, but I remember reading a thing like nobody from the original was coming back because most of them are dead.
Yeah, I'd imagine, yeah.
And like Barry Denon, who played the Chamberlain in the original died in 2017.
Ouch.
So I knew it wasn't him. So I looked up, it was Simon Pegg, and I was like, this motherfucker nailed it.
Such a good job. Going from that, from the new show to the original movie, spot on.
Yeah.
All the voices,
yep.
Spot on.
So good.
So good.
It's almost like the, again, I haven't rewatched the movie since, but I've seen it so many times, but it's like they either got perfect casting or they worked with the right people to make them sound so much like them. Because, like, Eddie Izzard sounds like Eddie Izzard, but he doesn't exist in the movie, so it's fine. But when you have things like Jason Isaac, who's playing an existing character, the Emperor.
Yeah.
And the Emperor is only in the movie for the first, like, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And he's only in, like, two scenes.
Yeah, because he's on his deathbed, literally. Yeah.
So, like, he has that one long monologue before he dies. But that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, but that was Jason Isaac. But it couldn't have been Jason Isaac because he was like 7 at the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it was
a really weird kid.
Yeah. Like, really strange, deep voiced kid.
Yeah.
Actually, how old is Jason Isaac? I'm going to say he's like my age, but he's 56. So at the time, do my math real quick. 37 out of 56. Him and 9?
Yeah.
Right? 9? No.
No.
Not 9, 11.
11, yeah, I think.
11. Is that right? 1963? No, all right, he would have been 9. 1982, 1963, he would have been 9.
Okay.
Right? No. How old would he have been? Jesus Christ, do math.
19?
19. Yes, 19. So he would have been 19. So I don't think he was doing voice acting when he was 19.
Probably not.
I mean, his first ever movie was 1989. His first TV show was 1988. So, yeah, definitely not doing doing the voice of the Emperor in the original movie. No. Plus, it says here, I can look on the Google machine, tell you who it was, and it was not him. So, it's just amazing how much they got these. I mean, they had 37 years to work on him, but to get these people to sound so much like them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mark Hamill's a very prolific voice actor, but a lot of times you can tell it's Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
There's always a little bit of Mark Hamill in there, no matter
and
what.
That's the one, that's why that's the one I could pick up.
Yeah. With. But it's like, Simon Pegg was the one that blew me away. Because I was like, dude, he's a nerd, so like he's probably practiced.
Oh, yeah.
That, but it's like, bro, you nailed that shit.
Yeah.
That fucking, that weird, like, thing he has at the end of every sentence, that, and that, like, mm-hmm. like, I was like, that's perfect.
Yep.
Like, how could you be that perfect at it
mm-hmm.
without being that guy?
The inflections that he has, the way that the cadence that he speaks, the way he speaks about himself in the third person at times. Yeah.
Yeah. And like it's always like a question.
Yes.
Like the way he talks, it's just, it was so well done. I mean, it comes down to like everything about it was tremendously done in the most loving and best way possible.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that's probably why it was so well done.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact, I mean, you have a lot of, it's still the Jim Henson Company coming back to do it. So it's not like you're super far off.
Yeah. It's literally not something, somebody else doing this, somebody else coming along the line and making their own prequel sequel type thing. This is literally Jim Henson's kid and Frank Oz, right? He returned to, or did he die?
I think he's dead. I could be wrong about that.
But either way, it's still within the family that they're taking care of it.
Now he alive.
Yeah.
He's 75.
Yeah. So I thought, yeah, he did have help. He did help in it.
Well, of course he's alive. He's in fucking Knives Out. I watched that trailer this morning.
Is he in Knives Out?
Yeah.
I didn't watch that trailer yet.
Oh, the new trailer is so good. The first trailer was amazing. The new one is fucking phenomenal too. I want to say, did he do any? He's not listed. Well, Wikipedia doesn't list him doing anything with the new one. But I know it's from his original, like him and Jim Henson's original stuff.
Yeah.
And all the back history. I think, want to say it's right here, right? I was reading it a minute ago. Mm-hmm. I saw it. Where'd it go?
I don't know. Where did it go?
I don't know. I lost it. Apparently, so the whole premise of, and I'll cliff notes what it was. There was this tome of information that was created by Jim Henson and Frank Oz when they originally designed the movie. Here it is. So the film sequel, which would have been a sequel, because of the richness of material available in Jim Henson and Frank Oz's notes on the events leading up to the original film, Lisa Henson identified the Wall of Destiny from the original film as the jumping point. And what was that creature or that culture? What was lost? What was the beautiful Gelfling civilization and all these different things that came out of it? Because they had all these notes and ideas of lore to fill in all these characters they designed for this hour and a half long movie. I say hour and a half long, but I could be wrong about how long it was. You watched it. It was an hour and a half?
It was an hour and a half.
93 minutes.
Yeah, because I remember I texted you guys.
Oh, that's right.
I texted you guys after watching that, and I was like, huh. Remember when movies used to be an hour and a half long? Because we just came off of watching It, which was almost 3 hours long.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
They had a lot of that material from the original creators to play off of that definitely helped them with the world building that was already done from them and doing what would have been more of like a sequel or if not anything else that would have added. So there's all this, it's like if you've ever like looked at all the back history there is in Star Wars, mm-hmm. It's very, very similar.
Yeah.
Especially nowadays. I mean, with expanding universe and all that fun stuff, there's so much out there. But even like Mass Effect, for example, like Mass Effect 1, if you've ever played through Mass Effect, the amount of data you can get from these data drop thingies that you find all over that have pages and pages of information about stuff you never even have to learn about.
Yeah, and that goes for other games like Elder Scrolls does stuff like that where yeah. You can literally sit there and read books, and it's books about the history of the world that you're playing in.
Yeah,
that literally have nothing to do with any storyline that you're working in. Yeah, yeah.
It's because you meet a character that's from this town that's famous from this battle hundreds of years ago.
Yeah,
or this one race that is no longer exists, even though they do technically, spoiler for Mass Effect. That has long been gone, but has, you know, effect of what you're doing, but not really has nothing to do with what you're actually going towards, that sort of thing. And it's like, I guess it's the similar to this. It doesn't say here how much, but I guess apparently there's so much that they wrote for it.
Oh yeah.
Because they planned on doing one or two sequels to it.
Yeah, Netflix has a little thing that you can watch. It's one of the extra stuff that they have that you can watch that goes over some of that stuff that just basically explains that there is just that they wrote so much that they fleshed out of this world. And that's what this show is, a little bit of that fleshing out.
Yeah, giving you visuals of what they wrote about and all these different characters and things like that. So, I mean, it's interesting to see that it came to life this way, but it's also interesting to see that they did so much, because like that's something that's not happening in movies nowadays.
No,
with original properties.
Yeah,
it's just like we wrote this 2-hour movie.
Oh, it was popular. Here's some more 2-hour.
Yeah, and
movie.
It's like, oh, okay, we'll just expand on it. Yeah. You know, because it's the way of the world. Sequels after sequels. Anyways, so yeah, that's I think that's about everything we need to talk about.
I think so.
Dark Crystal.
Yeah.
It's tremendous if you give it a chance. If you're a fan of fantasy stuff, you're going to love it. Mm-hmm. If you're not a fan of fantasy stuff, you're probably going to hate it because it is definitely not something that's for the not initiated into fantasy realm.
Yeah.
It was tremendous, so I recommend it highly.
So do I.
But yeah, that's it for this week's episode of Comes Naturally. We are
Joe.
I am Cody. And as usual, at the end of these, we always say, you fuckers just came naturally.
Yeah.